A week from Monday, NC Central will play at Virginia to open up the season. They follow that by heading up the mountain to play App. They're going to Liberty. They got trips to Marquette and LSU. The traveling show begins. Lavelle Moten, the head coach at NC Central. It's here. You got a lot of stuff between now and then, though, don't you? You got 10 days to get ready for Virginia. What's happening between now and then?
Man, just trying to fine-tune some things. We got a scrimmage here tonight against Elizabeth City. And, you know, what I'm doing is just trying to play guys 5 minutes at a time and just search for some different combinations. Because when you have some new guys, you kind of got to mesh them in, you know, with the returning guys. And so far, so good, right? You know, there's been – we were just able to put some things on tape, right? Because you play against yourselves in the summer and all, so it gets boring. They need to see someone with a different color jersey on. And so now you have some tape on who you actually can be, who you actually are at the moment, and what you really need to do to improve. So it's been a great process for us thus far.
So you have some new players, but I can't believe this. You have your eight returning top scorers from last year are back. So How is that even possible in today's college basketball world?
Man, it's tough, right? Because, you know, we're not even basketball coaches anymore. Like, we're general managers. That's what we are. And, you know, gone are those days where you're going to connect with the kids and on senior night they'll be crying and boo-hooing because they've been through so much and overcame so much, and then they got to this moment to see it through. It's just... I think those days are going to be behind us. I just think, you know, these kids are semi-pros and we're general managers. And it's no longer amateur basketball at its finest. So we just try to do what we can and just hope they return.
But those days really have been behind us. I think we've seen this for like the last 4 or 5 years. So how were you able to avoid, you know, you've got guys who average double figures. I mean, I'm sure that maybe in the back of their minds, hey, I could do this at in a bigger league in the Atlantic 10 in the ACC. How are you able to maintain all of those eight guys?
Yeah, you know, I just think it was by circumstance, and you try to build a relationship with them. The reality is, you know, basketball is a funny game, man, and we probably don't even have enough time for me to go in so much depth with it. But basketball is a funny game where you have people who are trying to advise kids on how to go, where to go, and how to do something that they haven't done themselves. You follow? Like, that's really, really,
right.
It's really, really weird once you, like, nobody jumps in and coattails a kid and tells him about boxing unless he's boxed.
Right.
Nobody does that with golf. Nobody does that with tennis. But with basketball, it's the Wild Wild West because, let's be honest, the pay at the end, right? Everybody wants that pot of the gold at the end of the rainbow. And so they're advising these kids. And it's so bad now that we have high school coaches that's selling the kids to other programs during the year, right? Because it looks better in their – it's a feather in their cap if they say, well, I coached a kid who was at a Power 5 school as opposed to a MEAC school. So it's no loyalty in anything anymore, right? It's none of it. So it gets out of control. And I think when you have some guys that's returning, you just got to say, man, I appreciate you guys returning. Thank you, right? Because it's that's it. I wouldn't say there's anything that we've done special because we have lost some kids. So we've benefited from the transfer portal and have not benefited from the transfer portal in regards to how it hits you. So it's crazy. It's really a difficult time for coaches. I think you see that's why some of the coaches are getting out of it because it's no longer what it used to be. It used to be simply about the kid in developing the totality of that human being. But nowadays, everybody just wants to put their kid in what they deem is the best situation possible. And, you know, that's where the chips fall. And, you know, I was having this conversation with some of my friends, and I'm like, it's crazy because every great college basketball player, if you had a great college basketball career, 9 times out of 10, you experienced a lot of adversity initially. Mm-hmm. And then you had to overcome that, right? Like me and Jerry Stackhouse, we've been friends for 30 years. I was like, yeah, we ate the other day, right? He came down, we had dinner at a lunch at a restaurant. And we were just talking. It was like, I said, yo, do you realize you selected the University of North Carolina knowing you weren't going to start there when you got there? Like, no kid would do that nowadays, right? And so Jerry endured those bumps and bruises. I remember what Vince went through at Carolina, right? We had those conversations. I remember what Raymond Felton went through at Carolina or whatever, right? I remember what, you know, Grant went through at Duke at certain times. You're going to experience the adversity, but that's part of the process. In order to get past the adversity, you have to find out what's really deep down within and inside of you. And I don't think people are willing to do that anymore.
Lavelle Moten is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show, NC Central head basketball coach. I want to ask you, I've always thought about this in terms of coaching. Do you think you could have coached? I know you were a baseball player as a kid growing up. Do you think you could have coached another sport?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Why?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because I was, you know, I was better in those sports, number one. And I was fortunate. Every sport that I played, I was always in the leadership position of that sport, right? Mm-hmm. So I was scrawny when I first started playing basketball, so I was a point guard, right? So I had to know where everyone needed to be. I didn't hit a growth spurt until my junior year in high school. In football, I was a much better – anybody will tell you I was a much better quarterback. And, you know, at 10 years old, my coach would let me call my own plays in Pop Warner, right? Who does, right? But I would literally just go home and study. Because we ain't have much to do back then. We wasn't distracted by the internet and all of those things. So if you loved the game, you really immersed yourself into it. And I was calling jet sweeps and bootlegs and play action passes at 10 years old. And then with baseball, it was the same thing. I was pitcher, catcher, and shortstop, right? So my coach at the time was letting me call the signals and things of that nature for the pitcher. And I was always immersed into a leadership position in those sports, so I understood it really well, right? I could tell you the entire Major League Baseball rosters of every team when I was 10 years old. Like, I was that crazy.
You
about
and me
it.
Both, and
so,
right?
Yeah, right? So I just think it was natural for me. And basketball was the one sport that I really had to work at a little more. But, you know, I go coach my son's flag football team now, right? So we run the double reverses and options, and right? So it's all of those things. And I had him out there on the baseball diamond as well. So to answer your question, I'm 100% sure and certain that, you know, I could coach any baseball team or any football team. And my mom reminds me of it every time she sees me. She wanted me to stay with baseball forever. But
right.
I tell her, you know, be patient, baby, because basketball has provided you a quality life right there.
And by the way, Trey Oliver doesn't need your help right now. It's going pretty well on the football field. The reason I asked the question is because I don't know why I've had these conversations with a bunch of other people, but we've talked a lot about coaching, and I think coaching is far less about X's and O's and game planning and way more about managing people. Like, I've used this example. Gary Williams, you know, great coach at Maryland. When he started coaching, he was a soccer coach too. So I'm sure Gary doesn't know a damn thing about soccer, but he knows how to coach people. He knows how to motivate and get the most out of people, although he has strange methods at times, or had strange methods at times. But because that's the way I look at it more than anything else. I just wanted your take on that.
That's it. You know, you hit it spot on. It's, you know, I told my staff, I just have a guy that I just recently hired that you may remember named Pat Cole. He was my MEAC player of the year not too long ago. And so it's his first time being on the other side. So he's in our staff meetings, and he just said, wow, coach, after like three or four staff meetings. I was like, what you say wow for? He's like, we really don't talk about basketball and X's and O's. I was like, nah, it's just about managing people. That's all it is, being able to motivate this guy or being able to check this guy or being able to communicate effectively with this guy and knowing what buttons to push to get the best out of him and knowing what buttons not to push so you can get the best out of him. That's all it is. It's just management. Their talent is their talent, and don't get me wrong, there's a level of culpability where we have to put them in the right situation at the right time. But, you know, you look at the great ones, that's what John Wooden was, right? Like, he had a lot of talent for all his worth. I love Coach K and what he's done, right? You never looked at a Duke basketball team and said, wow, you know, the offensive sets that they're drawing
right.
up is just, right? It was really simple. But I always said the one thing that separated Duke from everyone else, if you ever looked into their huddle during a timeout, you had 12, 13 guys locked in on what Coach K was saying. You look at anybody else's huddles, you got five guys behind the coach. They just zoning off, looking at the chili, just dancing to the band, right? But in Duke's huddle, he had the ultimate buy-in, and I think his Army background helped him in that sense. I try to study football coaches. You know, Mike Tomlin, my favorite.
Yeah.
He's been incredible to me. And just going up there, because football is a little more barbaric. You know, their personalities are a little different. But when I go to training camp, it's like 150 dudes, it seems like, that he has to manage all their personalities. So the ultimate quality control in the management and leadership of a coach is like, look, it's just being a leader of men at the end of the day, right? And just mm-hmm. so happened, we do this with basketball. But if my family is going to have a family reunion, I'm the same way, right? So it don't matter what role I'm thrust into. I just have to be in a position of leadership because it's who I am naturally.
Yeah, Mike Tomlin's my third favorite coach, just so just so you know. I mean, you're ahead of him. Rod Brind'Amour is also ahead of him.
My man, I appreciate it, man.
That's, oh, you know.
I'll cash up you that $20.
No. That's you know where my allegiance lies. I want to ask you a couple of more things, and we really don't have much
Take
more
your time.
Time.
Take your time. Take your time.
What is the impact? I asked this of Stephen Gaither from HBCU Game Day the other day. Mm-hmm. I am curious. What do you think the impact has been of Deion Sanders at Jackson State? We know College Game Day is going there this week, and that's cool and all that. But what do you think ultimately the impact has been felt across the HBCUs with Deion Sanders there?
You know what, man? It's crazy. Him and I and Chris Paul, we did a podcast maybe a year and a half ago. And afterwards, Deion, he got my number from Chris, and he said, man, like, you got so much knowledge and wisdom that I need to talk to you. It felt so crazy hearing one of your childhood heroes, right, get on the phone with you and tell you this. But through the last year and a half, we've become incredibly good friends, really close. We have intimate conversations about, you know, the pros, cons, the challenges, et cetera. And so he just called me yesterday. I had five missed calls. And when I came out of practice, it was Deion Sanders. And I was like, what's going on, man? And he said, man, I just wanted you to know, like, game day is here. I was like, college game day? He was like, yeah. And then I was like, man, let me tell you this, because you're going to be caught in the moment, but I'm pulling for you so much, because what you've done to shine the spotlight on HBCU athletics, the wants, the needs, the challenges, the culture, the highlights, the lowlights, and just the truth, I think is something that no one else could possibly do at this time. We've seen ADs and universities try to implement that and try to emulate that by going out to get a pro coach at their university. Well, that don't work, because it's only one Deion Sanders,
right?
Always has been, always will be. I don't care who you go that played in the NFL. I don't care who you go get. It's only certain people. And I told Deion this. I said, when there was a line and God had a line of giving out the gifts that he gave to Deion Sanders, that was a short line. Like, it won't many people in that line, because he has the ability to just walk in a room and captivate an audience by being himself. And not many people on earth can do that. And so you'd be hard pressed to find that any other place. And I'm extremely happy for him, what he's done, what he's put together. It's shown that HBCUs can succeed at the highest level if given the correct opportunity, if given the resources, if given the publicity, if given the marketing. And we have just some of the best basketball and football at our universities, and some of the best athletes at our universities, and some of the best coaches at our universities than anywhere else in the nation, and he's proven that.
Yeah, it's not just track and field, and that's where it gets pigeonholed into that. All right, two things about the NBA before I let you go. First, are the Lakers really this bad?
Yes.
Gosh.
Yes. You know, I hate to say it. I hate to say it. Like, I'm obviously I'm a Celtics fan, so
right.
You know, as long as we good, I'm okay. But you know, the Lakers. You know, I don't want to tell anyone how to do their job, but I will say this. LeBron James is the best point guard to ever play this game, right? And I say he's a point guard. People want to label him a three or four. Yeah. What? No. He's a point guard. He's always been that. It just hasn't been traditional to call him that because he don't fit the bill as traditional point guards.
Right.
But that's what he is. Since high school, you look at him, he's brought the ball up the court and initiated offense. With that said, you always have to have shooters around him.
Yep.
That's where he thrives, right? And since he was in high school, that's what he's had. How was he able to take the Cavs team, you know, when he was 22, 23 years old to the finals, and Booby Gibson and those guys, because they were shooters, right?
Yeah.
And so J.R. Smith, Kyle Cope, they were shooters. If you look at this Laker roster, they don't have anyone who they're on pace to break a record for the worst 3-point field goal percentage ever. And they're breaking the record of teams that was literally tanking and trying to be bad. They're trying to be good, right? And I just think, you know, it's L.A., it's the spotlight, right? It's showtime. It's all of those things. And I think Russ took a lot of the heat, obviously because they were finger pointing. But the person I always just said, like no, it's not Russ. Obviously, Russ don't fit. But the person that needs to be held accountable is AD, because this team was built around and for AD. That's who it's really built for.
Right.
LeBron has just continued to be LeBron. But Anthony Davis was the 28, 29-year-old guy that this team was built around. And when I see him play, I don't see the hunger of an individual that's trying to be great. I see the hunger of a guy that's satisfied. He got his money, got his championship. I'm in L.A. now. I'm cool. Whatever y'all say about me, I'm cool.
Right. And
sometimes that's the life of an NBA basketball player. I always say, man, obviously I know a lot of these guys personally. A lot of these guys don't care about winning championships, right?
Mm-hmm.
The media and the fans put that on them. Like, man, he got to win a ring. But inside, these guys are like, no, I don't. I'm a multimillionaire for the rest of my life, and my kids can eat. And I respect that, whatever it is. But I just think it was all built around AD and not LeBron. And he's not playing at the AD level that everyone thought he would. And so, in essence, it's hurting everyone because they don't have the shooting around them. I don't care who you put out there as a coach. I don't care who you put out there on the floor with them. If you don't have proper shooting to space that floor, you're going to be hard pressed to get a victory, and that's what they're going through right now.
Right. Next time we talk, I'm going to let the Ben Simmons thing cook for a little while before we definitively say that Ben Simmons, if he refuses to shoot, the Brooklyn Nets can't win. Not the way they want to win, but we'll let that cook for a little while, because Kyrie Irving is trying positive affirmation, which I'm not even sure what that is, but maybe he watched an SNL skit. But it's been a little bit of a disaster. Lavelle Moton, you are the best. I appreciate your time. Good luck against Virginia. I know we'll talk again soon. Best to the family. I'll see you later.
Thank you, my man. I appreciate you. Thanks for having me, as usual.